You know, I think about with given those types of situations, if we're not aware that we are being manipulated or programmed or coerced, or because sometimes it's not overt, sometimes it's not obvious. And the obvious is, oh, there's a fire, run. Oh, there's a man with a gun, run. You know, those types of things we all are, it's very easy to say, yes, I'm fearful because of that. But to have this low level, constant, chronic fear, I know people that walk around on this earth scared of everything and afraid of dying and afraid of so much. And just to kind of loop back, I had another tangent of a thought, which is, isn't it interesting when people don't plan for their death and the families are so upset and afraid and vulnerable, and then they end up buying the most expensive casket they can, and they end up making these decisions because they're pressured at a point in time where they're vulnerable and it wasn't thought out. And they're either feeling guilty or sad or all of those things, right? And they make decisions that, and I think part of it is our brain chemistry when we're under chronic stress. You know, the amygdala shuts down, our prefrontal cortex, and we can't really rationally think when we are in that state of stress. And so I think it all just kind of feeds into each other.
Totally. You know, I assume you've had discussions about this with many of your guests, but I think it's so important to really consciously regulate the intake of news media
Absolutely.
that you have, because the news media is based on fear. That's how they make money. Is that if they can get people afraid, they'll get them coming back, you know, like junkies. You know, because what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? Right? They're in such fear. So it really is, I think, an important step to take, not only for our own personal well-being, but to, in effect, sort of deny some of these corporations, which are like vampires making fortunes off of our fear. So to deny them those profits, I think, is also important.
I think so too. You know, I had this little experience last week. I was going in for a well woman's exam, and I don't watch regular television at all. I'll watch little mini series and a lot of PBS British shows, and I don't know why. But anyway, I just went in, and there was the television was playing, and there were ads and the news, and because I'd been away from it for so long, I was sitting there looking at it and I was just horrified. Like, oh my gosh, instilling fear, instilling fear, instilling fear, instilling fear from the ads to the pharma ads to any sort of ad to the programming, to the news. And then it's not enough that you can watch it once a day, but they run the same. They reiterate it over and over again, every hour, over and over again. And so I think about people, like I know my mother-in-law, you know, being elderly, she would watch the TV and then come to the dinner table, and all that she would talk about is the mass shootings and the politics and the and I'm like, oh my gosh, I said, you really must watch something else, please. I just couldn't take it. It was so negative and so depressing and so down. And you know, if we want to feel good about ourselves, and you know, I know you've dealt with a lot of the veterans and depression and suicide and that kind of thing that I do want to talk with you about yet is that, you know, we need to elevate ourselves, and we're not going to elevate ourselves if we're watching media that puts us into fear and brings us down and lowers our vibration. And then we get depressed and we eat crappy food and we don't exercise. And it's just this cycle that people can get into.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, so it's important for us to break that cycle, you know, to make a stand for our own well-being and for others, you know, by cutting off that addiction to news media.
And you know what you said earlier, which really resonated with me? You talked about being heart-centered, which I love. I talk a lot about that in all my courses and all of my Zoom calls and all of my one-on-one private client sessions. I talk about being heart-centered. It's so important versus the old mindset, the old construct of look out for yourself to we're going to look out for everybody around us. And I love the word equanimous because it's you're not the decisions you make are for the betterment of everybody, for the highest good of all, right? So how does that weave into some of the work that you're doing and some of your inspirations and passions in life?
Interesting. You know, my parents were both professors. And so in a sense, I was raised with the notion that do anything you can with your mind, but don't necessarily do anything with your hands or your body. You know? I mean, not literally, but, you know, those were sort of the inherited lessons. And one of the great junctions I came to in my life, which interestingly enough, happened when I was just on the precipice of my 40th birthday, and I had what I considered to be my long overdue initiation into mature masculinity through a group called the Mankind Project, a weekend workshop called the New Warrior Training Adventure. Subsequent to that life-changing event, I realized that my greatest gift is not my brain. It's actually my heart.
Absolutely.
It's my heart. And having that in my conscious awareness has been extremely helpful in what are now almost 30 years subsequent to that event. So my films, I think anybody with a just kind of a cursory glance would see that over the last 20 years in particular, they're more and more emotional. You know, and I tell people, you know, like my Journey from Zanskar film, I just introduced it the other night at a theater. I said, this is a three hanky film. You better have those hankies ready. I'm giving you advance notice, right?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, but you know, the other avenue of thought that your question leads me to, and I talk about this too in my second book, which is called Rights to a Good Life, is about sovereignty. And it's very interesting, you know, when I look around the world right now and I think about the archetypes that people like Robert Moore set up for us through his work in neo-Jungian archetypes. So he published a book in the early 90s called King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. And basically talking about how every human being manifests those four archetypes in different ways at different times. And some of us are depleted in a given archetype quality. And some of us are overinflated. We over-dramatize, you know, or overact. So the intention is that we all be balanced in, across all four of those archetypes, because we need them all. And I won't go into explaining each one and what it means and whatever, but the sovereign one, the king, the queen, that's the one I'm focused on here. And that is the one that, if you look around society, is the most diminished at this point in time, right? Where are the sovereign leaders? We do not see them in our political landscape. We do not see them in our corporate landscape. We hardly see them in institutions at all. The people who are looking out and saying, what is best for all of us? Not what is best for me. What is best for all of us right now? And how can we sit down together and come to terms and figure that out collectively so that we can act on that? That is huge. And as far as my personal journey with that goes, you know, I had a mentor tell me once, he said, Frederick, you're pretty balanced across the other three archetypes, warrior, magician, lover, but you're pretty diminished in the sovereign.
And really? That's, huh.
Yeah. And he said, and that's one of the hardest to acquire. And, you know, this is going back now over 15 years ago, but I consciously set out to develop that sovereign quality in myself. So I like to think that I'm pretty balanced there now as well. So, you know, the characteristics of the sovereign, and this is one way that we can all, including your listeners, manifest this in our everyday lives, is blessing. It is so important that we bless each other and ourselves, because this too has fallen away from active society, from our daily social interactions. And we are all starved, hungry for this kind of human connection through blessing. So, and it has to be something that, and I talk about this a lot in my second book, but it has to be something that is specific to the time and place and person. So it's not enough to, you know, to just give an award to some kid and say, you know, thank you, good job. We need to say, Bobby, I saw how you actually acquired the skills of mathematics that you actually were struggling with tremendously before, and now you're acing all these math tests. I want to say to you, I see you. I see you. I see how hard you've worked, and I want to bless and honor you for putting in that effort, because that is what's going to help you become the man you want to be in this lifetime. So we need to say things like that to each other on a regular basis.
That is so powerful, really powerful. And imagine, you know how maybe when you were younger, as I was when I had a teacher that said one good thing to me, you know, coming from a life of abuse and a mental health challenged mother and abandonment and all kinds of things. But, you know, in spite of that, I had one teacher that validated me in that way. He didn't use the word blessing, but that was in the fifth grade. I was 10 years old and I still remember it today. I still have a little card from him. I'm in my 60s now. I'm like, I still cherish that, that he had that faith in me when no one else, it felt like no one else did. And so that is so, so very powerful.
Yeah. Well, you remind me of, there's a Swiss psychologist who's written a number of books, and of course her name's escaping me right now, but the one that I first read and influenced me dramatically was called The Drama of the Gifted Child. But it wasn't in that book, it was in a subsequent book, but she talked about exactly that. She said that we can make a life-changing intervention in anybody's life by simply stopping to give them a single blessing in any given moment of time. So, and she was addressing abuse as her subject matter. And she said that if, despite all kind of abusive parents and a horrible environment, if one person comes up to us at any time and says, Jill, you are a beautiful child of light. You do not deserve the misfortune that you have in your life. And it's important for you to know that you deserve goodness and happiness and love in your life. It can be as simple as that. And that could change, because it becomes an anchor point, right? It sounds like it was for you, an anchor point to organize your life around going forward.
It was, and it was literally my salvation. It's like, oh, somebody sees me. Somebody sees me. And they value me for who I am. And I just think so many youth, and, you know, I know with, you know, you've worked with teens, so many youth go through life feeling lost because they never had somebody to emulate, right? To have that capacity to see a bigger picture and not just, you know, be what's the word I'm looking for? Not abusive, but diminishing someone, tamping out their light, belittling, demeaning. Right. Exactly. Yeah. That is so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alice Miller is the woman's name.
Alice Miller. Oh my gosh. Okay. I will have to look that up. So do you want to talk about, in regards to death and dying, some of the veterans that you've worked with, did you feel like that figures into this conversation?
Sure. Well, and it actually gives me an opportunity to offer a small blessing and thank you to you. Because that is how we met. We were introduced by a mutual friend And I was just starting out on the journey of my Veterans Journey Home film project. And you jumped right in and became a supporter of our project, a very significant supporter. So I want to thank you again, because you helped make it possible. And what was originally just going to be a single film, where we talked about the challenges that veterans face in transitioning into successful civilian life, ended up becoming a 5-film series. That I just finished 2.5 years ago. So for any of you out there who are watching, if you can go to our website and get the series, but you'll see Toni's name in the credits as a thank you, because she helped make it all possible.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah.
And you know, I'll just say, just to clarify, is that to add more value to the story, is that my father was a veteran of the Navy, and no, of the Air Force, actually. And when he passed 6.5 years ago, we had leaned into the rock. We did develop a trust for him. He did say he wanted a certain amount of money to go toward something, doing some good along the veins of the military. And so as I was researching, I put a feeler out to Bob Fung, who put us in contact with someone that you knew. And so you and I met for lunch. It was the first time I met you. I was so impressed with you, and just had the feeling because I'm very intuitive. You're just an exceptional human being. And so I had no problem saying, okay, from my father's trust, this is where I would like this to go. So it was an easy decision for me, you know, once I met you. So I'm glad that it helped further everything that you're doing. And I just want to take a moment here too, is to let everybody know that, you know, all of what Frederick is doing requires money. They are lobbying, isn't that right? Through, you're trying to get measures passed. And can you talk about that with what you're trying to accomplish? You're trying to also get your films into the military bases. Is that right?
That is right. So my company is called Warrior Films. We're a small nonprofit company based in Oakland, California. And our mission statement actually boils down to 4 words: bearing witness, creating change. So basically what I do is I look for stories of human transformation, of people going from one stage of growth to another, and use those stories to make positive social change. So our veteran series, we're trying to alter the landscape for veterans. We're trying to posit the notion that, first of all, PTS is not a lifelong condition. A lot of people in the medical profession will tell you, you've got it, that's it, you're going to always have it. That's not very helpful. So no. We try to posit the notion of post-traumatic growth. So the whole idea is that, yes, you have trauma, but so do so many other people. And depending on how you turn and face it, you can actually harvest fruit from that trauma. Just like I did eventually from harvesting fruit from my own father's death through my late wife as a kind of a surrogate teacher. So all 5 of the films focus on different rituals of return for veterans, so that basically they can go through the rite of passage that is required of them to abandon their identity of service person and come into a new identity as an individual post-service. So that has a lot of different aspects to it, but one of them is mission. So they have to transition from a mission of service to the government and to the superior officers, the military's objective, to a self-directed mission of service. What is their individual human life calling for them that's unique to them? They have to find this, and we can help them find it. And then act on that mission of service, right? So that's one aspect of it. But all five films focus on a different rite of passage, these different rituals of return to help veterans uncover their new civilian identity and then to go forward with confidence and with love in their hearts to enact this new identity. So that's the series.
That sounds amazing. And, you know, I think when people are in the armed forces, they really stuff their own identity in order to conform to all these rules, all these. My oldest daughter was in OCS, Officer Candidate School in the Marines, and then became a San Jose police officer. And so she likes rules, and that works for her. And she has her own identity, her uniqueness. But I think you're right. When people come out of that, they're like, who am I? Who am I now? How do I find my authentic self? And struggling with the trauma. And I know you were mentioning when we met that first time, the rate of suicide is quite high, isn't it?
Yeah, well, depending on the stats you read, it hovers around 22 a day.
Wow.
22 a day. And we've lost more veterans after their tour of duty than we have during their tour of duty. So in other words, they've died in greater numbers at home in the U.S. rather than in overseas areas of combat. That's extremely sobering. So a lot of the brilliant teachers that I focused on in these films understand that, and understand that at some level, it's not actual death that they're seeking. It's a death to their identity of service person, and they desperately need a rebirth into a new identity. So yeah, that's, I was going to say something else and now I forgot.
That's quite all right. You know, I think we all need that kind of self-work. I'm doing this work now. Like, what was my old identity? What do I want to release? What do I want to get rid of? What do I want to tell myself? And especially, I did also have PTSD, being tear gassed and our house burning down and being attacked by neighbors and all kinds of things. So I went through a military type upbringing. I was only 12 years old when these things occurred. So very formative years. And so it is a growth. I love how you position that. It puts it in the positive. It lets people know they're not victims and that they do have power to change and shift and claim a new identity. And so even now, you know, I'm doing self-work now. I am a powerhouse. I am, you know, this. I am a money magnet. I am, you know, whatever all the
that.
I ams, all the affirmations. And I teach those to people too, as I know you must. Because they are so powerful. It helps make things real. So,
you know,
can you, yes.
Yeah, well, I just want to say that I never use the D in PTSD.
Right.
Because it's disorder. And I refuse that notion that there's some disorder. There's some medical ailment that people who have post-traumatic stress have. No, this is normal. This is human life. We all are going to have trauma at some time or another.
Oh, yes.
So by getting rid of the D, we can focus on the growth. So what needs to happen now so that I can turn toward this experience and not repress it, not hide it, go through it? And
right.
What lessons does it have to teach me about the person that I need to become? That's
exactly. Mm-hmm.
And you know, you touched on this, but I'll just say it. The military is very, very good. They understand rites of passage. And they basically have civilians die to that symbolic identity of civilian and be reborn into new identity as soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of advantages to that. That they understand community. They understand that the person on their left and their right is essential to their well-being. So they have to sacrifice their own life to keep them alive if they can. That's a beautiful lesson that all civilians need to understand and learn and can learn through initiation. But the point that I'm getting to is, so we give them boot camp as a rite of passage into this new identity as soldier, as service person, we do not give them reverse boot camp to get them into some new identity post-service that they deserve and need.
Right. Now, the programs that you're putting in place, the films that you're producing, is it to that end?
Yes. They're all about reverse boot camp. Mm-hmm. They all feature these different modalities of reverse boot camp. So just to give you, I'll try to make this brief, but you know, one of the films focuses on a Native American style vision quest ceremony where 12 veterans come into the desert of Eastern Washington. And in the middle of those 12 days, they go out on a solo journey for 4 days with nothing but a backpack, a sleeping bag, a tarp, and 4 gallons of water to drink every day. No food.
Hmm.
So they fast. And then, so they have this experience where they can sort of begin to, again, symbolically die to that old identity and be reborn. We also have a film about 22 women veterans who do a 4-month meditation retreat, sort of. And we see them learn sensory awareness so that they're not subject to their bouts of PTS when they arise. They can begin to integrate that experience more meaningfully and fully into their ongoing everyday lives. So, and then we also have a weekend workshop film that we focus, there's a group in Milwaukee called Healing Warrior Hearts, and they teach a lot of these skills to veterans, and we see them transform over the course of a weekend. So those are some of the films in the series.
Now, those are so powerful. I have seen parts of what you're doing as you've been going along these years. I'm like, that looks interesting, especially that kind of the Native American, I forget what you call it, but
vision quest. Yeah.
The vision quest. That looked really interesting. I'm like, yeah, Frederick's up to some good work here. So you have offered, I want to make sure we talk about, I just want to say the titles of all three of your books. One is At Death Do Us Part that you mentioned, as well as Rights to a Good Life.
Yes.
Turds of Wisdom. That is hilarious. I saw that. I started really laughing out loud. And can you just give us a little synopsis of that book?
Well, thank you for asking, because it's funny because I'm still a little bit shy about talking about that one in public. I'm so glad that it got a laugh out of you.
Oh, it did. It's a great title.
Well, I can't tell you how many conversations I had before I published it. I'm generalizing now, but most women, you know, I'll start with men. I would say the title to, they would laugh their asses off, right?
Yeah, yes,
most
yes.
Women, I would say the title to would like, ooh, you know, like somebody just hit him in the side with a hammer. You know?
So, not me. No. You know what? I'm very feminine. I loved the Turds of Wisdom. I thought it just was perfect.
I'm glad you liked it. So the subtitle says it all: irreverent real life stories from a Buddhist rebel. Okay, so basically, the book is my first humor book, and I talk about that. You know how it is that. I want to turn a lot of the remaining years that I have left to humor. And I feel like if I can do nothing more than help people laugh during all of the horrors that we're surrounded with on a daily basis, then maybe that's enough. So there's stories of two kinds in the book. One are just memories that I have from my own life, where just to me, really funny and almost ridiculous, crazy things happened. So I recount those. And then the other is just kind of mini essays, blogs, really, on given topics of interest to me. And there is a theme of Buddhism that runs through it all, because that's one of the pillars of my life. So I talk about things like being on a long-term meditation retreat and all of the crazy things that can start to happen that I think are hilarious. On meditation retreat. So that's one of the chapters, but there's many that relate directly back to Buddhism.
I love that. And I see excerpts of of, you know, that relate to Buddhism, and they always resonate with me. And I don't associate with any one particular, you know, I'm more spiritual, but I love it all. They all have just some wonderful, so much wisdom in it. So that is definitely a book I'm going to buy, Frederick. I'm going to go onto Amazon and snag that for myself and leave you a review. And so I just want to let everybody know that if you go to Amazon, and I will place a link under this interview, however you're watching it, whether it's on YouTube or on the podcast, I will make sure that that link is there so you can look into his books. And please also, if it resonates with you, contribute in whatever way you can to Frederick's mission. If it resonates, Frederick, thank you for doing so much good work out there, for elevating people, for bringing your wisdom and your experiences and your insights and your light. Your light is huge. And so I really appreciate it. And I thank you for taking the time with me this morning too. I think so far you're my, don't tell anybody, but you're my favorite guest so far. So.
Well, thank you, Toni. You know, I want to say that, you know, we've had so few direct interactions, you know, really it was just that one time when we first met with Drew, and then you signed on to supporting the veteran series. So my recollection of you then is very, very different from my experience of you now. And I just want to honor you for what you've done for yourself, because you are so effervescent. You are so alive and sparkly, and you too radiate joy and light. So I want to say I see you and thank you.
Thank you. Boy, you're making me tear up, which is a good thing. Good emotions. Thank you, Frederick, so much. Okay, thank you everyone for listening to Toni Talks Humanity Matters with my special, very special friend and guest, Frederick Marks. Be sure to check him out, and thank you for listening, and we will see you the next time around.